It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday, July 1st. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. For the first time ever, a man who is paralyzed may have the chance to use his muscles with his own thoughts. The technology from University of Ohio's Wexner Medical Center is called NeuroBridge, and it bypasses the spinal cord to connect the brain directly to the body's muscles. Basically, a chip is implanted in the brain's motor cortex. That chip talks to a sleeve of material around your arm without going through the damaged spinal cord. And that sleeve moves the hand forward or helps it grip something. Ian Burkhardt has been paralyzed for 4 years after a driving accident. He's the first in NeuroBridge's clinical trials.
It's a great experience just to be like, okay, now I can open and close my hand again. And that's something I wasn't able to do for 4 years.
Burkhardt says it's not easy. The new technology requires a new kind of concentration.
When you're thinking, open your hand, you don't really have to think exactly what you have to do. You just kind of think, okay, I want to open my hand and pick this up, and it just does it. Now we have to go through and have me focus on just extending my hand, and you really got to focus on that alone.
For Burkhardt and others, though, the clinical trials of NeuroBridge might lead to more sophisticated setups and new machine-human interfaces for people with severe accessibility challenges. You may have heard by now about the dust-up over a Facebook study that tried to figure out whether it could use its news feed to influence the emotions of users without their knowledge. The study from back in 2012 involved nearly 700,000 people. Researchers wanted to know if viewing more negative posts in your newsfeed made you more negative as a user with your own posts. Same idea with more optimistic or positive posts, basically trying to determine whether emotions on Facebook are contagious. Users and some academics are not happy about Facebook's methods, but did it really work? And what are the implications? Karen North is a professor of social media and psychology at University of Southern California. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Nice to talk to you again.
Why did these methods work, at least according to Facebook? I know there are a couple levels here.
So human beings are social animals. So what people saw was their friends were posting either somewhat positive or somewhat negative content, and they leaned toward doing what their friends were doing. Whether or not they did that because the emotion became their emotion is an empirical question that will have to be answered.
Is there anything in your mind that's dangerous about this study? I mean, I try and think of the motivations of Facebook, right? And this is about them understanding how their social network works, but also figuring out ways to make people buy stuff.
This is probably a combination of how to get people to buy things, but also how to drive up the engagement and the enthusiasm for Facebook.
Is that okay with you?
Well, as a psychologist and as a person interested in social media, I want to know the answers of what manipulates people's behavior in one direction or another. However, it's not just Facebook and Google and Twitter that are manipulating us. If you think about it, data have always been collected about us in a variety of contexts. If you have a frequent buyer's card anywhere you shop regularly, they are collecting data on you. So this is nothing new. It's just that it feels a little bit more invasive because it feels like it's infiltrating our personal conversations.
Karen North is a professor of social media and psychology at USC. Karen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Google is a global multi-billion-dollar corporation, and it's become one fairly quickly. For tech companies, this kind of rapid growth means lawyering up and lobbying up. Google spent millions in Washington, but the tech giant is also starting to build an army of lobbyists at the state level to fight everything from bans on its glass headset to resistance over providing its high-speed fiber internet service. Tony Rahm has been cataloging the company's state lobbying power. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Give me a couple of snapshots.
As places like New York look to restrict the use of Google Glass behind the wheel, Google has gone into those legislatures and tried to stave off the most onerous restrictions. It's done the same thing on the self-driving car. You know, just before Google could even put this autonomous vehicle on state roadways to test it out, it had to change state laws that allow it to operate it. And so Google has really gone to bat for its cutting-edge technologies.
Well, in some of these battlegrounds, we'll call them, Google is a new player, right? I mean, I'm thinking about my own neighborhood, which has one option for high-speed internet service. This is something where Google has had to spend money on lobbying because of other tech companies that have been for decades sort of entrenched in this process, right?
Google Fiber has required a lot of regulatory maneuvering, because in order for Google to lay those cables, in order for it to offer its gigabit service, it has to get access to infrastructure, it has to put down those fiber huts that deliver service to homes, and all of that require working through the regulatory process. In California, it's registered lobbyists to talk about fiber, and when telecom companies have gone on the offense in places like Kansas City, one of the original fiber projects, it's had to tap its long-standing lobbyists in order to fight that back.
What is Google's lobbying spending in states around the country mean for consumers?
So all of Google's lobbying is done in the company's own self-interest, and sometimes that benefits consumers. So when Google lobbies and hires these folks to talk about Google Fiber, that's a good thing for consumers in the end, because it means that they have one potentially cheaper option for internet access. But at the same time, Google is still lobbying in its self-interest on something like privacy. It wants to stave off the most onerous restrictions on how it collects and uses consumers' data.
Right.
So sometimes that sort of meshes with what a consumer wants, but ultimately it's important to remember that Google is spending these millions of dollars in order to satisfy its own business or political needs.
Tony Rahm is a tech reporter for Politico. Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for us. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.